This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Depression, drug addiction, motivation, schizophrenia, Parkinson's disease, attention deficit disorder. The key to all of these conditions can be a simple molecule manufactured by the brain for the brain, dopamine. It's called a simple pleasure chemical, and when you get a little squirt of it deep inside your head, you just don't like it. You love it. A UTSA professor of neuroscience was just awarded a $1.8 million grant to unravel some of the mysteries about dopamine. Welcome, Carlos Palladini. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much.
If you got questions about dopamine and maybe its connection to some of these conditions, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at tprsource. So, Carlos, dopamine. Mm-hmm. Why is this such an important chemical?
Well, dopamine is the chemical in your brain that gives you this rewarding sensation whenever some unexpected reward happens. But it's not just that. It's actually a chemical that is driven by the activity of dopamine neurons deep in your brain that actually teach you to make the association between the actual rewarding event and all the particular behaviors that you did prior to the event that actually led to you at getting that reward. For example, doing your job well and getting a paycheck is not necessarily something that dopamine really reacts to unless you did your job really well and your boss decided to give you a bonus if you get paid every Friday and all of a sudden you notice that your paycheck is much larger than you expected. In that situation, you get this burst of joyous, rewarding sensation that gives you this feeling of well-being. And not only that, you then try to figure out, well, what was it that I did in order to get this bonus? And then you think back and you actually realize, oh, I really did well in my job. I'm going to start doing my job really well in the future so that I can continue to get this larger sum on a paycheck, for example.
But that's a very esoteric kind of a thing for, yes, for an animal. That's
right.
What we are. And usually the reptilian part of our brain, the very base of our brain, reacts to more direct stimuli, whether it be narcotic or food, sex, or even music.
That's right. So this part of the brain is actually what some people refer to as the old part of the brain. So it's earlier on in evolution, as it were. And the real reason that we have this dopamine circuit, this reward circuit, is actually really for survival in animals and even for us as humans, as in modern humans. So instead of a paycheck on Friday, perhaps we need to learn how to hunt to get food. And we need to develop the correct strategies in order to get food.
And also develop the correct appetites for certain,
exactly,
things.
Yes.
Sweet, you know, sugar doesn't actually taste sweet. Sugar is, your brain interprets that as sweet, and you like it because typically if you're out in the Serengeti, this is a great bonus to get, and you want to be able to get so much more of it. The problem with our modern diet today is that we crave sweet all the time, and we get it all the time, and it's throwing our metabolism out of whack.
That's right. And actually, listeners don't see it, but I'm actually holding a bottle of Mountain Dew right now with me.
As a prop.
As a prop, yes. And one of the pleasurable sensations about drinking a Mountain Dew is not only the caffeine, which is yet another drug that drives dopamine release in the brain, but the sugar in it as well. It's really high in sugar. It's really high in caffeine. And one or perhaps a few people would say that I'm addicted to Mountain Dew. So as you mentioned, this is part of your survival circuit. And whenever something like sugar that we as Americans perhaps would take way too much of takes over this circuit, and your brain acts as if it were a matter of survival in order to get more sugar, in order to perform the behaviors that you would have to perform to get that sugar in the future.
Many people are familiar with the Robin Williams film, Awakenings.
Yes.
And we saw his character, Dr. Sack's character, coming across these patients who had basically had a dopamine a problem, that their brain wasn't able to do uptake of dopamine because the part of their brain had been injured during a flu epidemic they had. And so these are people, because they couldn't have dopamine absorbed into the brain, they were not able to do simple, they couldn't move. They were immobilized.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's Oliver Sacks who wrote this book called Awakenings. And his patients early on in his career had this form of catatonia, meaning that they were simply unable to initiate any kind of movement, and they basically looked like statues. They were stuck in a particular position. And Dr. Sachs's insight was that it was perhaps dopamine that was missing in the brain such that they could not initiate movements. And this is actually also a particular symptom in Parkinson's disease, where patients' dopamine neurons die as a process. And so what Oliver Sacks tried to do was to give these patients a precursor for the chemical dopamine called L-DOPA. And for a time, it worked really well. These patients suddenly became
animated.
They could move. They acted as normal as you and I. The problem was that with continued use, the body adapts to the fact that there's too much dopamine in the brain. And
you had to keep upping the dosage.
Keep upping the dosage.
Until it lost its effect. And
right.
I understand that with rats, experimental rats, when they have blocked the dopamine receptors, that rats will just lie there, even if they're next to food, will not even eat it. They will eat it if you put the food in their mouths, but they don't have the ability to be motivated and to drive the muscles to able to pick up the food.
That's right. So they just don't have the motivation. So this is a key symptom of drug abuse, in that the only motivation that people suffering from drug addiction is to get more and more of the drug, even at the expense of feeding themselves. So they become very malnutritioned, even at the expense of maintaining a job, even at the expense of maintaining a relationship with your family.
Even at violating their own moral moorings.
Exactly. So if when it becomes a matter of survival, even you and I will do whatever it takes to not die. And your brain is sort of hijacked, and it is led to believe that this is a matter of survival.
So we're learning about why dopamine is critical for our well-being, how when it becomes out of whack, our brain may produce too much, too little. Maybe you've got plenty in your brain, but you can't take it into your system. All sorts of reasons why the dopamine circuit, the pleasure circuit, could go on the fritz. We're going to explore that. We'll talk about that. We'll take your calls. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX, and we'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The National Institutes of Health wants a closer look at dopamine and what it does to the brain, how it motivates people, why too much dopamine could affect things like clinical depression, drug addiction, schizophrenia, Parkinson's disease, all sorts of issues that people have. Professor Carlos Palladini is with us. He's from UTSA, and he studies neuroscience there, and he received this $1.8 million grant to unravel some of the mysteries there. And if you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. And let's get a caller on the air with Linda. And hi, Linda. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
My mom had Parkinson's. You know, besides the movement disorders that people often think about, you know, she had a lot of personality changes and paranoid delusion. Like, you know, she thought people were in her attic listening on her and stuff like that. And so, you know, I tried to talk her out of stuff, and she just, you know, she couldn't be talked out of the delusions. And so, you know, there's that common expression, mind over matter. And I began to think, that's really not true. It's like when your brain chemicals are whacked, it's matter over mind. And so I was just wondering, I worry a lot whether I'm going to get it or not and be in that state. And so is there research ongoing that's, 10 years down the road, are we going to be able to help people better than now?
Linda, thank you for your call. And I'm sorry about your mom, but thank you so much for calling in. So, Carlos, is it genetic? Is that something like that be passed on?
So there is a type of Parkinson's disease that has a genetic component. But fortunately, that is a small percentage of the people who suffer from Parkinson's disease. So unless your mother, you know that she has this genetic form of Parkinson's disease, then in all likelihood, it would not be passed down to you.
What about the personality changes that could come from dopamine levels?
Yeah, so you're right. The most people think of Parkinson's disease as a motor disease, but there is a very serious emotional and psychological component. It's just that the motor disease is the one that's most obvious to people who see it, and it's used as a type of diagnosis prior to being able to tell if the dopamine cells are actually dying in the process. And so the caller mentioned about mind over matter, and I agree with Linda. There isn't really mind over matter, because your mind is matter. It is your brain, and it is the activity of the neurons in your brain. And if the dopamine neurons are dying off, giving you the symptoms of Parkinson's disease, including these paranoid delusions, including these depression as well, these are real things that are happening in your brain. This is a physical event that's happening in your brain, and that the dopamine neurons are dying for, right now, unknown reasons. And the last part of the question was, what kind of research do we have? And the best research that I'm aware of right now is really a continuation of the therapies that help the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. So, for example, right now, most Parkinson's patients will be given L-DOPA as a medication to help the symptoms of Parkinson's disease, or they'll undergo a surgery called deep brain stimulation, which is actually an insertion of an electrical wire into your brain that's then stimulated so that the motor symptoms can be abated and the person can have the proper movement. And down the road, what we really are having is refinements on those types of therapies. And although there is quite a bit of intensive research these days in actually trying to determine what is the source of the disease, why do the dopamine cells die to begin with, we are still quite a ways away from being able to determine why that happens.
We see things like physical trauma has played a role in that, viruses, and they could be low-level viruses or even flu-like viruses, all sorts of things, can play a role in that. That's really hard to track down.
Exactly, yeah. So there are various different hypotheses on why Parkinson's disease happens to begin with, and it's becoming clear that there may be even different types of Parkinson's disease. Like I mentioned earlier, there is a genetic form of it. Other forms seem to be due to, for example, the environment, your diet. There are hypotheses out there that put that forward. And so that's the problem. It may be that we may be trying to find different sources for a common event, which is the death of dopamine neurons, which then give us the Parkinson's disease symptoms.
But isn't your research, you're looking at these brain cells, these astrocytes?
Exactly.
And aren't those, it used to be thought that those were brain cells that were just kind of there like glue to hold the brain together.
Right, yeah.
But now we're learning that this is a very important brain cell, which is involved in the maintenance and health of the brain and repairing of the brain.
That's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously the dopamine and this transmission and uptake of it, there's a lot of wear and tear on it. I mean, mm-hmm. can it just be there's an inhibition in the repair?
So I'm not aware of any research that looks at into that sense. But what we're finding more and more these days is that these astrocytes, or more generally speaking, glia, are actually involved in the communication between neurons in the brain. So they're not just these support system or this glue that holds the brain together. They actually are involved in when the dopamine neurons will fire these bursts of electricity. So it is all of a sudden this rapid firing of electricity and dopamine neurons, which results in increased dopamine release at target sites in the brain, are actually driven, or facilitated by these astrocytes. And it's funny because when we think about the brain, we think about this circuit kind of like a computer circuit, these electrical circuits going back and forth. In fact, the vast majority of the cells in the brain are these glia, of which astrocytes are a part. And so it's becoming clearer and clearer in research that these astrocytes are playing more and more of a role in the actual activity on a millisecond-to-millisecond basis of the neurons.
Okay, back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Hugh has called in. Hugh, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I know in these chemical systems in the body, there's usually for every pro thing that does something, there's an anti thing that does something. So there should be an anti-dopamine. I'm wondering what that is. And like two teeth that don't quite hit, the anti-dopamine may also be a pro for something else, and the dopamine may be an anti for something else. Would you comment?
Thanks, Hugh. Great call.
Yeah, that's a great call, and it's a really good point because I failed to mention that dopamine not only increases suddenly in the brain, but there are also sudden decreases in dopamine. And people who have tonic or chronic decreases in dopamine express symptoms of depression, for example. Or
clinical depression.
Clinical depression, or what's called anhedonia, meaning that they are unable to feel sensations of pleasure or reward. So you're right. There is an increase in dopamine, which is this sensation of reward, but there's also a decrease in dopamine. I used the example and at the beginning of the show where you get a paycheck and you get a bonus, and that feels really great because you weren't expecting the bonus. But say, for example, instead of a bonus, you got a pink slip saying that you are suddenly fired. That probably would not feel too good to you. And what's happening there is actually dopamine levels are suddenly decreasing in your brain. And so that is kind of like sort of the yin and yang that you mentioned. Although you're also right in the sense that there are other chemicals in the brain that are more involved in the sensation of pain specifically, and those are not exactly involved with dopamine. One, for example, is called substance P in the body that gives you these sensations of pain. If, for example, you put your hand on a hot plate, you don't need a decrease in dopamine to tell you that that's a painful sensation and you're going to move your hand away from that hot plate real quick. It's the pain itself that does that to you.
Okay, one more caller. John is on the air. Hi, John. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a father with late-stage Parkinson's and an uncle who has MS, so unlike the other caller, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to get it. But my question is that all of his family, they seem to attack the same certain areas of the body, and most people with these diseases don't actually die from the disease. They die from issues with their throat, with urinary tract infections, or because they fall down from the balance. So my question is any of this research looking at the link between dopamine and the primary causes of morbidity with people with these diseases as opposed to the actual chemical process of the disease in the brain?
Okay, John, thank you for your call. Good luck to you.
Yes, sorry about your family. I'm not very familiar with the actual research that involves the morbidity or the actual causes of death in these cases. But we know, for example, that Parkinson's patients do end up having movement disorders. It's actually a hallmark of Parkinson's disease. They're unable to really initiate movements. When they do initiate movements, they have really a lot of trouble actually controlling that movement. And so I can definitely see how a sudden fall, especially in elder patients. Parkinson's patients tend to be elder patients, although there is a very rare form of Parkinson's disease in younger people. And then the other part of your question was referring to how these few cells are involved in so many diseases. And you're right. I think the human brain, the number that people bandy about is something like, 100 billion cells in the brain. But the dopamine neurons are really only in the hundreds of thousands. And so there's a really small percentage of neurons in the brain that have such an outsized effect on behavior. And it's because they are part of this reward survival circuit. So any disturbance in the actual dopamine neurons will have this sort of multiplier effect on how it affects behavior.
But there's also very critical pathways from that area where the dopamine is released to other parts of the brain,
exactly.
One of them being muscle activity.
Yeah, so the actual region of the brain is part of a larger circuit known as the basal ganglia. And the basal ganglia is just a collection of different parts of the brain that sort of are connected to each other, and these are the ones that actually control movement, especially the initiation of movement, the planning of movement, so that you can reach for your a sandwich in a smooth movement with your arm without it shaking and missing for most of the time. And dopamine is thought to actually facilitate this circuit in the
right.
brain.
Right, so you don't have dopamine, then you're unable to reach for the cookie. Okay,
exactly.
We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to go to the NPR news break. When we come back, we'll talk about ADHD and dopamine and other issues. This is The Source on KSTX. Back after this break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Why do you think they call it dope? That was the question that anti-drug abuse PSA asked us back in the 1970s. The real answer is because it's short for dopamine. Dopamine is the chemical produced by the brain that drives behavior with pleasure, and the dopamine pleasure circuit can be a major factor in drug addiction and all sorts of conditions that we have with the brain, whether it be attention deficit disorder, or even schizophrenia, chronic depression, and Parkinson's disease. So I'm joined this hour with the UTSA professor of neuroscience, Carlos Panini. Palladini, and he was just awarded a $1.8 million grant to unravel some of the mysteries of dopamine. We're going to continue our conversation. And let's get a caller on the air with Michael. And Michael, hi, welcome back to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm always interested in the brain because I've had some difficulties. I've had a few concussions, and my mother right now suffers from Parkinson's. And I've been diagnosed with ADHD, and so I've been struggling with different things and stuff like that. I might be even bipolar, but I've heard some different things from, I think it was Daniel Ahmed that talks about ADHD in his book, and about having a low carbohydrate, high protein, intense exercise diet that might help ADHD. And I was wondering if there was any connection that you might have that you've heard of.
All right, Michael, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. So first off, is there a connection with dopamine levels and ADHD, attention deficit disorder?
Yes, there is. In fact, most medications for ADHD are actually a form of amphetamines. And
Like Ritalin,
exactly. And as we all know, amphetamine is a drug that, if taken in high enough concentrations and in the form that's sold in the street, will result in large releases of dopamine in the brain, giving you that rush, that sense of euphoria. But in low measured doses and in a different, slightly different form, it will help you focus and maintain a task at hand.
Because
so, yes.
we talked about the issue of motivation before and dopamine,
right.
And people who had no dopamine ability, they couldn't grab the cookie. They had no ability to plan action and complete action.
Right.
And some people with ADHD have been talked about not being able to do goal-driven behavior or finished right. tasks.
Right.
And so is that what we're seeing? Are those the symptoms that we can see?
That's exactly right. So the people who suffer from ADHD are unable to see the goal and end, or if they do see the goal and end, they become easily distracted by more immediate things happening in the environment. So a slight increase in dopamine with the help of, for example, Ritalin will help the dopamine being released at the appropriate time to keep the person focused at the more distant goal that they're trying to reach.
Okay, another caller, Monica. And Monica, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I had a question. What a role does dopamine itself play in autism? And then the drug, Special K, that they use for pain, they're bringing that into usage for depression. Is that related to dopamine or serotonin?
Good call. Good questions, Monica. And so let me ask you about autism. Is there any evidence of a connection?
I'm not particularly aware of any specific connections between dopamine and autism, although I wouldn't be surprised if someone found some in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other question was, what was the
about,
particular drug?
About serotonin.
And Special K, was it?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is.
I think Special K is referring... Well,
we're trying to get her back on here for
okay.
a second. And Monica, are you there?
Yeah, the drug is ketamine. It's referred to on the streets as Special K. It's ketamine.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you are saying Special K.
So you mean like spice, the artificial marijuana?
No, it's a Special K. Yeah. It's actually the chemical is actually called ketamine.
Okay.
And yeah. it was originally made as a veterinarian tranquilizer, not to tranquilize the veterinarians, but for veterinarians to use to tranquilize animals and to use surgeries. It became pretty popular, I think, in the 90s or so in rave parties, and when it was called Special K, and because it's one of these drugs that's called a dissociative, in that you feel like you're having this sort of out-of-body experience, or at least that's what people say. And but ketamine does have its medicinal uses in actual standard practice. But I am not aware of any particular uses since I'm not a physician myself. And I don't know in what instances ketamine would be used, especially in terms of how it would be used for the dopamine system.
So Monica mentioned serotonin. And serotonin is another pleasure drug. Dopamine doesn't have a monopoly.
Not the only
on
one, that's right. Yep.
And so is serotonin, but that's not a burst-release drug, is it, a chemical in the brain?
Yeah, so it's also released by the activity of neurons, and so it will be released more so when the neurons speed up their electrical firing. But it's just that people who suffer from depression, for example, they take what are called SSRIs, or specific serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And what those drugs do is that they prevent the serotonin from being sucked back up by the cells. So usually the chemical is released by the activity of neurons, and they're usually quickly sucked back up so that they're no longer lingering in the space in between cells where they actually communicate with each other. But many drugs, like these SSRIs, what they do is they actually allow the drug to linger there for longer because they're blocking the uptake of the chemical. And that helps people with depression to become less depressed and have better contentment in their lives.
So we're reading about possibly connection between dopamine and schizophrenia, and maybe
yeah.
too much dopamine in the system can cause this break with reality.
Right. So when dopamine is being released at inappropriate times or in a great amounts greater than normal for the brain, then these associations that we normally would make between the behaviors that we perform in order to get a reward, we're making associations with things that aren't happening. So the brain is receiving dopamine at its target regions, but it's doing so in a way that doesn't jibe with the environment, the outside environment. So because our brains are really good at interpreting what's going on in the environment, we'll think that
we're always looking for
example,
for
hearing voices. We're always looking for connections. We're always making patterns in the world so that we can learn how to deal with the environment. And so if there's really nothing going on, but your brain thinks there should be a pattern there, then we start making them up and we start having delusions or even hallucinations. And people with schizophrenia in particular suffer from these types of symptoms.
And it's because they have too much or they don't have the ability to do neural uptake to monitor the levels.
Right. Yeah. So the actual reason why schizophrenia happens, again, unfortunately, we don't know what it is. And in fact, there are other theories of how schizophrenia
It's very complex.
It's
one of the most expensive diseases in the world and impacting so many people and absorbing so many resources. Okay, we're going to go to a one-minute break. We'll be right back, continue our conversation with Carlos Palladini about the dopamine and the pleasure chemical. Stay tuned. This is The Source on KSTX. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. So dopamine tells the brain that a reward is especially awesome. You get this jolt of pleasure in the brain, and that tells the brain to remember this experience because this experience is critical to survival. This is very helpful when you're on the Serengeti and you make a discovery of about a cache of food or how to accomplish something that is going to benefit you and your tribe. But here we are now in the modern world, and it's easily a system that can be hijacked and cause people to do unhealthy behavior. We're here in the studio with UTSA professor of neuroscience, Carlos Palladini, and we invite you into our conversation. The number is 210-614-8980 as he talks about his research into the pleasure chemical dopamine, which is also connected to many complicated conditions in the brain, chronic depression and drug addiction and things like that. So I'm going to talk a little bit about drug addiction. How is it that dopamine is connected to drug addiction?
So it's actually pretty fascinating in that pretty much every drug that can be abused in one way or another, either directly or indirectly, results in an increase in dopamine release, and an increase that's many-fold higher than what would normally be done by natural rewards. So that's how drugs of abuse work. In one way or another, they're going to affect the activity of dopamine neurons, or in one way or another, they're going to affect the release of dopamine in the brain. And it doesn't even have to be drugs of abuse. People become addicted to food. People become addicted to even online gaming, which is just a behavior in of itself. And
because really, you're just sitting there in front of your computer clicking buttons. You're not really having an experience.
Right.
But it hijacks the brain into thinking that you are conquering and doing
it's
awesome
just,
things.
It's just a rewarding sensation. And the more you do that, and especially if you are predisposed to become addicted to high levels of dopamine, then that will happen to you.
Right. And so earlier we talked about attention deficit disorder.
Right.
And we know there's a connection. People who have ADHD love computer gaming. And is that make them susceptible to, you know, this that kind of a jolt of dopamine from that sort of system?
I think the issue with online gaming is that there really is no long-term thing that you have to achieve. It's you're always being inundated or barraged with all of this stimulation, and so that can be a source of reward. So you're constantly being rewarded with something happening. If it becomes a dull game where you have
like work,
then it's not so pleasurable for you.
All right, let's get Ashley on the air. She's called in. Hi, Ashley. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. I just recently started taking 5-HTP, which is hydroxytryptophan. I've read a lot into it that it's very good for ADHD, which I am diagnosed with. But I also read that, and that one is supposed to raise your serotonin levels.
Exactly.
I also read that if you take too much of it, you could deplete your dopamine, which doesn't sound that great. So some people are trying to tell me that maybe I should take tyrosine as well to raise dopamine levels. What do you think about that, and how do you feel about self-diagnosis with herbal supplements?
Ashley, great calls. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carlos.
Yeah, that's a great call. And you're right. So 5-HT is just another word for serotonin. And like we mentioned earlier, dopamine is not the only chemical in the brain. There are very many other ones, and quite a few other ones that actually are involved in reward, including serotonin. And because of that, they're also very helpful with particular diseases such as ADHD. As far as herbal supplements, again, I'm not a physician, so I would defer to actually having a professional help in determining whether specific diets or different supplements are helpful or not to you.
And we've known from previous programs and research that shows that herbal supplements aren't always what they are. What they say on the label is not exactly what you get in the jar.
That's right. There's always that problem as
well. So you have to be real cautious and careful about where you're getting your products from. But then I just want to ask you, though, what should a person do really to optimize their dopamine health?
Well, I guess like anything else, have a healthy diet, have a healthy lifestyle, something where you are actually engaging in rewarding situations, whether that be a hobby that you really love. Maybe your job itself is something that you love. Engaging with your family, have a loving family. Just have
– try to get dopamine from good, healthy sources.
From natural sources, and that's
I mean, that's like good triggers,
fine.
Healthy triggers.
Exactly.
So you try and get dopamine from running and exercise and being outside,
right?
Not so much from being online and other sources like that.
Exactly. Something that will promote your health in any ways.
Yeah. So, I mean, because the pleasure that you get in your brain, that is connected to your survival.
Right.
And if you associate that with negative things, then you're actually you're chasing the wrong dragon.
Right. Yeah. So essentially those things that become pleasurable to you, like drugs of abuse, become pleasure to you at the expense of actual natural rewards. So people with drug addiction will give up whatever hobbies they used to have. They'll give up their jobs. They'll give up having any kind of association with their families. They'll prefer to have associations with people that can get them more drugs.
So what about smoking, nicotine? How does nicotine interfere with the brain?
So nicotine is yet another drug that is also can become very addictive. And with caffeine, nicotine is by far the most ingested drug in the world. Caffeine would be more by drinking coffee, but with nicotine, it would be through smoking cigarettes, for example.
But you see people with dopamine issues very much drawn towards nicotine.
Yeah. So actually, many people with schizophrenia, one thought is that they self-medicate by smoking cigarettes because the nicotine helps them with that.
But isn't nicotine, the molecule itself, compete for dopamine for uptake in the brain, and as you flood your brain with nicotine, you're kind of dampening the effect of the dopamine if you're suffering from too much.
Right. So it competes with – so actually the way nicotine works is if it does compete with dopamine, what that actually does is it allows dopamine to, again, linger in the space, the connection between neurons in the brain, similar to these other drugs that are taking as medications like the SSRIs. And so the actual overall effect is one of more dopamine in the brain that's lasting for longer than it should.
Okay. All right. Another caller with Cal. And Cal, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
My question's about alcoholism and I guess other forms of drug addiction and something I've heard a little bit before about dopamine and the sort of old animal midbrain, but specifically my question is it true that in an addict or alcoholic, it gets to the point that the need for the drug is not mediated by higher brain function, by judgment or thinking about the consequences such that they, you know, you ask an alcoholic, well, why did you pick up the drink? You knew what was going to happen, and they'll just honestly say, I don't know. I just did it.
All right, Cal. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. So, Carlos.
Yeah, that's a great question, and you're right. So Like we mentioned earlier, this is a part of the brain that is, as some people call it, the old part of the brain or primitive brain. And so that is a part of the brain that will has very strong effects on behavior. It will really drive your behavior. Like we said, this is a part of your survival circuit. So if it's something that is a matter of survival, you will do it without thinking. And the problem with things like alcoholism and other types of drug abuse is that people need more and more of the drug in order to get the same level of reward that they had compared to the first time that they had it. This is a known development in drug abuse. It's called tolerance. Essentially, the same amount of whatever your drug of choice was is insufficient to actually get you the same high that you used to get. And so people are unable to control themselves, and not only that, they need more and more of it. So even at the expense of anything else, they'll just go ahead and try to get their next drink. And like you said, when you ask them, why did you do that? They said, well, I don't know. I just needed a drink, and that's what I was doing.
Adrenaline, how is adrenaline compared to dopamine?
So adrenaline actually is chemical in your body outside of the brain, but it's very similar. Actually, it's identical to what's called epinephrine in the brain. And that's what gives a lot of people that rush sensation when they take drugs of abuse, especially drugs like cocaine and amphetamine that are called psychostimulants. And when they take this, not only is dopamine released, but other what are called catecholamines. And these are like norepinephrine, epinephrine, but also adrenaline in the outside of the brain and the body. And so that rush that you get from adrenaline is driven much the same way by drugs of abuse as dopamine is. And that's why some people are, for example, adrenaline junkies. They tend to want to base jump or go rock climbing or snowboarding, any kind of event that sort of simulates this scary sensation that something big is about to happen.
Go to casinos.
Go to casinos. Gambling is a really big one. The anticipation of that reward, that money, is actually a really big deal for gamblers. And casinos actually are actually pretty good at getting people to continue to do so. So, for example, with the one-armed bandit where you supposed to get, for example, 5 cherries in order to get the big $1 million prize, it turns out that people actually get a lot of 4 cherries in that situation. And what we try to think, as because we make such great patterns, is we think, oh, I almost got that 5th cherry. And that right. incentivizes you to go for yet another one. So you just keep trying and keep trying, even though the fact that you're getting 5 cherries, is the probability of getting that is much less.
So don't trust the dopamine jolt.
Don't trust it, yeah.
Okay. Carlos Palladini is a professor of neuroscience at UTSA, just awarded a $1.8 million grant to unravel some of the mysteries of dopamine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And this is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening in.